I'm going to start today with a guided meditation that I learned from my dear friend, Reverend Michael Moran, who died last March. And I've kind of made it my own meditation, but it's his idea. So if everyone would take a deep breath and go within. Now place yourself someplace that's very comfortable, someplace you want to be, someplace that's very safe. Just be there. Be in the peace with that. Whether it's mountains or a beach someplace or grandma's house, someplace that's safe. Put yourself there. And get experience with that. What are you seeing? What are you feeling? What are you hearing? What can you smell there? And as you experience it, realize you're not alone, that you're with another presence. Whether you call it God or Spirit or universal intelligence or indwelling peace, it's with you and envelops you, has an arm around you. And you're there enjoying this beautiful place, this place you want to be, that you like being, with this indwelling spirit. And as you move around, you come across somebody else. And it's someone that you may have had an issue with, or there may still be an issue with them. But you notice they too are enveloped in the arms of Spirit. And so you look at them and you say, I forgive you. I release you. I love you. And you move on. And you let that go and you move on, and maybe you'll see an issue that is bothering you. And you'll see that it too is enveloped in spirit, and you'll say to it, I release you. I let you go in love. As you keep moving on, you see different people. Some of them you know personally. Some you may know from various kinds of media. But each time you stop, you look at them, you say, I forgive you. Now go in love, and I send you away in love. Finally, as you're walking, you'll see someone sitting, and you'll walk over to that person. You'll say, it too is enveloped in love or peace or God or whatever you want. And as you look at this person, you see that you're looking at you. And you say to you, I forgive you. I love you. Thank you for who you are. I hold you in love. So let's take this thought and hold it in a minute or so of silence. As you move on through the world, forgiven, moving through a world of love, be with peace and be at peace as we move through. So be it.
gates open wide, free the love I am inside. Heart, please open, I am. Heart, please open wide, free the love I am inside. Heart, please open, I am. Heart, please open wide, free the love I am inside. Heart, please open, I am.
So hi. I haven't done this for a long time. I haven't spoke here for over 5 years. I know that. So thanks for inviting me back. It's good to be back. I've got some old friends. I have some longtime friends in the bandstand. It's good to see you. Anyway, so several years ago, I was at this speaking here, and the minister at the time was Reverend John Considine. And who I understand just passed a while back. Yeah, so hold him for a minute there. But anyway, John sent an email to all of the board members saying that he would be gone, that I would be speaking, and to please be here to support me. One of the board members wrote back saying, I'll be glad to be there to support Ernie on Sunday, unless the skiing looks good. I don't have any issue with that at all. I understand that completely. See, I often celebrate communion in the cathedral of the tamarack and the fir and the pine. The huge wooden columns will reach up nearly 100 feet sometimes to a ceiling of a sky that is blue or white or gray or a cloudy relief of all three. The floor is usually covered with a thick, dark green moss or grasses or ferns that change color through the seasons and usually is blanketed with white during the winter. Oftentimes, through the middle, a deep creek will babble towards some distant ocean as it cascades over rocks and bubbles under logs and splashes against the shore. It's creating a music that accompanies a choir of flickers, finches, and jays. So that's kind of church for me. That's why you may not see me here every Sunday. But as Amber said, I've written a few stories that have been published around. And I brought a couple with me today. Hopefully to kind of set our idea about intention, about being grateful, about celebrating. So the first one took place several years ago. I'd been camping. I'd spent the night camping. Actually, this one was gifted to me by the Canadian Rockies and the animals that live up there, a lot of the animals. So I'd spent the night camped on the Vermilion River in Kootenai National Park and was headed toward Jasper National Park. My search was to find and photograph caribou, and it was about to begin. I was excited. The season was mid-fall in October, and it was a solo trip for me. And as usual with a solo trip like that, I intended it to be a personal and spiritual growth time for me. I knew also that I would be in both grizzly and black bear country. And I hope, certainly, that I would not have any encounter with either one. Several times during that previous summer, my late wife and I had seen signs of bear and tracks of bear in our yard in the woods out north of town here a ways. And one time when we were backpacking on an extended trip, we had a really close but very safe encounter with a black bear. And with those experiences, it just affirmed with me the reason why I always need to be cautious as well as conscious that we share the same habitat. Now, in some cultures, some native cultures, bear represents introspection, sometimes called the dream time. With bear, we can feel a kinship because it's an omnivore, as we are. It can stand and function on two legs, as we do. We also think of bear when we think of hibernation, going within. And so with each bear encounter, I'm reminded of the importance of doing exactly that, of going within to that inner voice. So I was driving toward Vermilion Pass and the Continental Divide, and I kept seeing places that drew my attention and tried to ignore the invitations as I was in a rush to get farther north to see the caribou. Now, the Canadian Rockies, a lot of you have probably been there. The Canadian Rockies are full of beautiful, unique geological formations. And those park rangers up there have made a point of making sure that every traveler knows about every one of them. However, my single focus that day was to get farther north up into caribou country. And I did my best to pay no heed to them. But due to my morning cup of coffee, I stopped at a rest stop at Numa Falls. As I was walking back to my truck, the liquid voice of the nearby hydraulics on the falls was an invitation to take the short hike to the source of the falls. Now, waterfalls in these mountains happen way too frequently to be able to stop at all of them. But I was glad I surrendered this time. I'm glad I listened. There was a footbridge that crossed the narrow chasm where the stream dropped several feet. While standing on it, I felt the power of the water as it sanded out round, smooth bowls on the tops of the rocks in the bottom of the noisy cascade. It was a good place to take a respite from driving and to feel the soft, refreshing spray on my face. I was invigorated and refreshed by the strength and the gentleness of the water. When I got back to the truck, the biggest raven I've ever seen landed on the ground right beside me. Now, I know these big, black, mysterious birds are used to people and expect a handout, but this guy was really big. So I grabbed a camera and snapped off a few shots of him, and then I got ready to drive. Well, he hopped up on the hood expecting payment for the pictures he had allowed. I was entertained, but I started the engine and he flew. But I thought about raven medicine and wondered why it had been presented to me in such an in-your-face way. Again, in many native cultures, raven represents a heightened awareness and a greater understanding of our consciousness. It's sometimes called magic, sometimes called spirit, sometimes the voice within. Raven asks us to experience the transformation it brings to our multidimensional self. It also reminds us to reunite with the mysteries of the universe that can expel those inner demons that are within us sometimes. Even though the short trip was fascinating, I felt like I had wasted some time. However, while driving, I heard Raven say, "The intended use of this trip is a personal and spiritual journey." So listen to that inner voice. Is that some sort of lesson for me? Is my rush to reach a destination rather than being in the journey, some kind of inner demon? So then in a few miles, a sign beckoned to another roadside attraction, this time Marble Canyon. Has anybody else ever gone up this road? It's a beautiful drive. Yeah, I love it up there. This time was Marble Canyon. Now, in these rugged hills, beautiful, dramatic canyons are as common as waterfalls, and they're often coupled together. But some mystery, possibly Raven, I felt the call strong, so I stopped again. Now, Marble Canyon is a short, deep slot created by Tucum Creek flowing through an ancient terminal moraine. It appears to be a deep crevice, but it's actually a gorge carved by years of aqua-color glacial water etching limestone and white dolomite, making it look like marble, thus the name, Marble Canyon. As I investigated the ravine, I was studying the secrets of the spray-shrouded slot. I saw boulders that had fallen and been wedged into the narrow crack, sometimes 100 feet from the bottom of the gorge. Vegetation fed by the fog of the torrents flowing below was growing on the top of them. And there were natural bridges that straddled the abyss where the water had first flowed over the rock until the rasping of the glacial till in the surging icy melt excavated a channel under the lip, blasting out a hole, leaving the arch. Water is cleansing. It's powerful and subtle. Sometimes it's called a universal solvent. It can change a landscape in seconds, or it can spend thousands of years slowly, persistently trying to change a scene. It also feeds and nurtures the growth of all plants and animals. Water is a necessity of life, and it destroys it. It's a study in polarities. So for me, it's easier to be present when I'm in nature. My senses are drawn to the energy of the natural world. It's so much bigger than me, even bigger than my imagination, yet I'm still an integral part of it. So I often use these lessons to keep it all in perspective for me. Anyway, after hiking up and back on a trail that crisscrossed the ravine on footbridges for a couple of hours, I was back. And I felt good to have the fresh air in my lungs and enjoyed another exceptional geological experience. And I felt like I really wanted to get going and get moving on. Back on the road, there was light traffic. So while climbing beside the river toward the pass, I kept thinking about Jasper and getting to the caribou. I was getting excited about that, wondering why I'd been so easily distracted. However, it was still early and the light was still pretty good if another photo op presented itself. Along the road and near the top, I saw something crossing the yellow center line of the road, maybe a half mile or so ahead. I slowed a little but kept going. My curiosity was becoming quite piqued. I rolled on watching, wondering, until I was close enough to identify the grizzly bear angling across the road, looking directly at me. The sun was backlighting its long guard hairs, giving it that grizzled look in its name. It wasn't huge, but it was full grown for sure. I think it was probably a female. I stopped. She was looking through the windshield, it seemed like into me. And she continued walking for several more steps. Then she turned slightly and headed off the road to my right, allowing that distinct grizzly profile to be seen. You know, the shoulder hump, the dished line between the eyes and the nose. We continued to maintain eye contact until she had all but disappeared into the woody brush. I powered down the right side window, hoping to get a picture without getting out, but the foliage didn't allow a shot, so I cautiously got out on the left side, camera in hand, and leaned on the hood of the car where the raven had scolded me a little while before. She stopped and turned, looked my way for a moment, and then wandered toward the river. The brush nearly concealed her, and I could only see movement through the branches. Then she stood up, stood tall enough to look at me again. I think she wanted to see if I was still watching. Still, it wasn't a clear shot, even when I manually focused the camera. So I sat and waited. I was thoroughly enjoying the encounter, and still I was alone with her, and I had never been this close to a grizzly bear in my life, only black bear. It was very exciting. I felt safe, by the way. After her look, she disappeared, and I wondered if she was sitting in the water or fishing in the river or something. Another car stopped, and the passenger asked what was up, and I said, "Nah, I think there's a grizzly bear down in the river." He said, "Can you see it?" And I said, "Nah, not really." And they took a quick look and then went on. I was alone. Good. In a short time, it seemed forever, She crawled up the steep bank on the opposite side. Sure enough, she'd been sitting in the stream and was wet from the waist down. It looked like she was wearing a pair of wet, dripping pants. The climb brought her right back up to my level, and as soon as I had a clear shot, I reset the autofocus. I love autofocus. How about Todd? Todd knows about that. I love autofocus. And started snapping away. Fortunately, the lens I happened to have on was perfect for the distance I was at. She stopped and looked back. You know, it sounds odd, but it appeared that she was posing. She would walk and stop, look around, look up, turn back and look at me, step up on a log, turn around, look at me. I snapped the shutter a dozen times with each pose and took advantage of every position. I felt that it had been maybe a prearranged encounter, and maybe that explained all the mysterious distractions of the morning before. So Miss Grizz across the way seemed to sense it was time to be going and headed on up the hills into the scrub. She had moved in and out of sight for a while and was gone. The last time I saw her, she stopped and looked back at me again. She seemed to be looking into me. I thanked her for the time and the pictures she had allowed. So back in the truck, introspection was at the front of my mind. It had been a morning of listening to my inner voice and being in the moment with each click of my shutter. The reward, an early morning misty face wash, an entertaining and enlightening visit with a raven, a refreshing walk on the lip of a deep, narrow gorge, and some communion alone with a grizzly bear. That day was followed by a full week of photographing wildlife, mountainscapes, camping, hiking, waterfalls, but no caribou. And I saw several other people, and they had had the same experience too when it came to caribou. And most of them were there for the caribou also. So that's a story that I like to celebrate, that I like thinking about, because it was a real celebration for me to be involved with that. And as I promised, I brought another story. Now, this one I don't think I've ever told any place before, although it's been published. And this one's just fun. It's about the earliest part of the relationship with Linda and I, who some of you knew Linda, I know. So Christmas was proving to be a little different for me. The changes started in the spring. See, Linda had found a cute cabin on a small mountain lake and decided it would be about the most perfect place to live. I came with the cabin. Of course, since I'd spent several years there and living in those woods, I also thought it was about the most perfect place to live. And now to share with her. So how was Christmas going to be different? Well, in one way, the house was being decorated. I had always decorated by writing Merry Xmas in the dust on the top of a surface, if I could find a clear one. Now things are hanging on the walls where, now there's boughs hanging on the walls where things used to grow naturally. Then, of course, when I did my spring cleaning, which usually came in August, I'd put away the decorations, of course. We also have a Christmas tree. I'd always felt that a Christmas tree was rather redundant since there was a lot of vegetation around my place all the time in various stages of dying, sitting around gasping for water and air. But this year, there's a tree. However, it's not the tree that we planned on using. Originally, we had hiked in the hills up behind the cabin, and we saw several trees together that were small and looked tight and looked like they would most of them probably wouldn't reach maturity. So we decided that we'll come back and get one of those for our Christmas tree. So then one morning in mid-December, after some new powder fell, it was time to head out to get to the tree. We strapped on our snowshoes and took the old plastic torpedo sled that kind of looks like a big blue plate. And we headed up onto the hills. And being the youthful 50-somethings that we were way back then, when we got to the perfect sledding hill, of course, we had to try it. It was in just two runs, Linda got the award for going the fastest. That bright white hair of hers was blowing straight back. I got the award for going the farthest, since my diet changed in the spring when Linda moved in. Linda also got the award for doing the most damage to a tree, which became the one we weren't planning on using for Christmas. So I made a run, and then it was Linda's turn. She took off her snowshoes and put them under her on the sled for walking back up the hill. And she asked how to steer, and I said, oh, it'll kind of go where you want it to go. Just follow my track. So then she started down the track I was on, now packed for faster sledding. A short way down, she left the course that I was on and started down the side of the hill. Now, this was a lot steeper and had lots of moguls. On the first mogul, gravity lost a battle to the sled, the snowshoes, and Linda. As she was flying over the terrain, I was quite impressed by her speed and immediately conceded the contest to her. Her speed was as impressive as her shrieks. However, I think if she had closed her mouth and those big dark brown eyes and tucked her hair in, she might have got even a little more speed. Anyway, about halfway down, a young Douglas fir was awakened from its winter dormancy by an airborne sled with a middle-aged lady flying over it and two snowshoes flying close behind. The snowshoes, from a tree's perspective, looked like a weird distorted wings, making the whole scene look like a rather freakish angel on a plate swooping down at near cosmic speed, sounding something like a siren during a power surge. The poor tree took a direct hit and laid down, buried in the previous night's flurries. As the angel went over, one of the loose snowshoes stuck in the snow right next to it, looking like a strange tombstone. Linda stopped just as she was starting up the ravine on the other side. When I got down to her, the sled was still buried, as were her legs on the sled. When I looked at her, at first, I thought she had lost her eyelids, but they slowly reemerged from deep in their sockets. She did suffer a little hypertension of vocal cords and some minor wind burns to her face, but she was fine. We climbed back up to the tree now, completely removed from its roots, and Linda insisted we could not cut down a second tree since this one was already down. So I looked around, and I was glad that she hadn't hit the tamarack a few feet away. Oh, you got it. Good. So we didn't put the tree in front of the bay window as we had planned so it could be admired from every side. We put it in the corner where the side that didn't have branches, some of them might still be flying, I'm not sure, couldn't be seen. Our Christmas day, we enjoyed our tree, the decorations, a big meal with family and friends, while listening to music of the season from a stereo sitting on a very clean surface as we celebrated the beginning of a new year. And I had a new memory of the angel on the top of the tree. Anyway, it's easy to celebrate when you have stories like that to tell, and I'm sure all of us do. I know we all do. But my talk title today was Celebrating All of Life. And so last summer, it became clear I needed to celebrate in a new way. While looking at some x-rays with my doctor, it was clear that I needed a new hip, a brand new hip. After years of hiking mountain trails and valleys and high ridges and thousands of miles of bicycling, sometimes 200 miles in a day, the hip needed some serious attention. I don't know if the walking and the bicycling had anything to do with it, but I can't help but wonder if it did. That and my questionable diet most of my life. But I also thought about all the wonderful stuff this hip had helped me do in my life. Besides the strenuous activities, it was there when I was standing on the porch with Linda the day we got married. You guys were there for that, too. It was there the day that my stepdaughter, Anna, got married, and I was dancing with her. It was there when I was dancing with my granddaughter several times, just for fun, one time right here. It held me and stood with me on the Brega Doon, the bridge over the River Doon in Ayr, Scotland. It strolled through the cemetery of my ancestral home of Hingham, England. It had helped me walk the steep cobblestone streets of Assisi, Italy, and in the St. Mark's Piazza in Venice on New Year's Eve with probably a million of our nearest friends. It helped me stand and move sometimes as I danced on stages and plays that I was acting in. While it may seem odd to celebrate the need for a major surgery, everything leading up to it does need celebrating. Therefore, the surgery needs celebrating also. So the week before Thanksgiving was time, and I met with Dr. Lucas Smith, who I think is a gifted surgeon. The procedure went well, and as did most of the recovery. In fact, really, the healing went so well that I thought all the warnings that had been given to me about taking it easy didn't apply to me. Then I was sitting, relaxing, watching a ball game on TV, and I stood up, and a sharp, screaming pain went through me that almost took me to my knees. When I finally got around to talking to Luke the Slasher Smith, he said, well, maybe it was too early to be driving your tractor and hauling wood around. Maybe it was too early to be out on the snow plowing snow. Maybe it was too early to be removing the tree that was down on the road by your place by yourself. My friends and my family, they all said, you're not Superman. They said, why didn't you call for help? And they're right. In a minute, I could have had people there helping. But I didn't. But I also got a lot of love from my friends and my family. A lot of love. But not much sympathy on that one. The point was made, like being hit with a cosmic 2x4, that I needed a lot more rest and a lot less doing. It reminded me of the conversation I'd had with Crow several years ago to celebrate the whole journey. And from Bear to listen to that inner voice, that deep inner voice. Obviously, I needed more time with the leg up when under ice. Maybe reading, maybe listening to music, maybe just sitting and looking at the woods around my house. And that was all worth celebrating too. It really was. So I want to wrap this up real quick, I hope, with another short story. It's real short that I brought that is also one that I celebrated a great deal. And my hip was with me on this one, too. I was sitting on an icy, snow-covered rock, feeling the energy from the core of the earth, which all of the rocks carry, next to a fast-flowing stream that was falling too steep for the water to freeze. As I studied the mist rising from the water, I thought I saw a form that seemed to be adding to the haze I was in. I sat quietly as it moved across in front of me, possibly on the other side of the fog altogether. Pretty soon it started toward me, moving and stopping, taking a step and stopping. Finally, a shape I recognized began to develop. It was a big bull elk. Taking a step or two, it browsed on an old leaf left on a piece of brush, and then it moved closer to the stream. I could see the breath from his nostrils as it joined the cloud over the stream. Then I noticed my breath was joining the cloud over the stream. The breath from elk and the breath from the stream and my breath was all creating one cloud. When this happened, I wanted to shout out, what a perfect image. We are all one. But I didn't shout. It would have changed the whole scene, and elk needed to be there to browse and to have a little water. Stream needed to be there to take that mountain energy down into the valley. And I needed to be there to get the message from elk and stream. And I wanted it to last for as long as possible. So I celebrated it all by sitting in a cold, cloudy, sweet, serene silence. Thank you. Peace. Thank you.
It's your song. I'd like to introduce Pamela Van Kirk, who's going to sing this next song. Yay.
Will is to grow. God bless the truth.